This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good afternoon, Bucknutters. Welcome to What We Learned Live, following Ohio State's 20-12 win over Penn State. Should have been 23-6, but what are you going to do? I really liked what we saw overall out of this Ohio State team. And, you know, we're going to get into all of that. We're going to speak with the Dean of Ohio State Football Recruiting, Bill Curlick, here in a few minutes. We're going to hear from Jay Book, Jonah Booker, to get his thoughts on the game. And then after post-game interviews, we're going to hear from Patrick Murphy and Steve Hellwagon from Ohio Stadium. So a few things that we learned from this game, other than this being, let's just bottom line, if they won by 1 point, you know, that would have been a good thing. The bottom line is Ohio State won this game and won it convincingly. And we will obviously remember this game as the JT Tuimoloau 2.0 game and Marvin Harrison. Obviously, those were the stars of the game. JT and Marv just absolutely showed out. We learned Kyle McCord needs to get a lot better with ball placement. Like, not like he kind of needs to get a little bit. No. Not a little bit, but like a lot better, like markedly better if they're going to achieve their goals. We also learned this is an elite defense. Now, Penn State's offense, certainly not elite, but I love this defense. I love this defense. Absolutely love it. It's too bad they gave up that late touchdown. At least they kept the 2-point conversion off the board. But the pressure that they got, I mean, Tuimoloau, once again, just absolutely collapsing the line of scrimmage. But, you know, Kyle's got to be a lot better. He's got to be a lot better. Now Devin's hurt. So it's not like you'd be like, well, you know, there's not that much of a gap between Kyle and Devin. Just look back to camp, take Ryan Day at his word. And we heard the same thing, that it was legit, that it was going back and forth. You know, I had heard at one point that Devin was ahead. But now that, I mean, hopefully Devin's injury is not serious. But we learned JT had a great game. We learned Marv had a great game. We learned McCord's got to clean up his ball placement big time. And even though, I mean, you know, late he had a play that went against him. But Jermaine Matthews, for a true freshman out there, wearing that number 24, I hope he always keeps that. He'll probably go to a single digit, won't he? I hope he keeps that 24. Reminds me of Sean Springs. Sean Springs didn't even play as a true freshman. Sean Springs actually redshirted, which is still crazy. That actually happened. That's a real thing that happened. Sean Springs redshirted and then showed out for 3 years. My favorite Sean Springs story is in 1996, as a fourth-year junior, he won Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, didn't have an interception the entire year because no one threw his way. So I love what I'm seeing out of this defense. I thought the running game overall, I was happy with the running game overall. Penn State's defense came in number one in the country in total defense. So you've got to give them respect. I thought overall Ohio State's running game was what I wanted. I said coming into the game, they're not going to rack up rushing yards against this Penn State defense, but they need to be effective. I thought overall they were effective. At times they weren't. I tell you what, it ticked me off to no end when the game was 10-6 and they had the ball. Kate Stover had a nice hell of a catch. Kate Stover continues to step up, had a hell of a catch. And then they, a couple plays later, it's down to the half yard line, you know, a third and goal from the half yard line. I'm like, just get up there and do a QB sneak. If you need to, do it twice. So they hand off. Mayan had no chance, gets stuffed. And then I'm like, just kick the field goal, just make it 13-6. No, they go for it. They threw the pass to Carnell Tate, get stuffed. But hey, you beat Penn State 20-12. We all would have taken that entering this game. Buckeyes were favored by 4. They doubled that. So I think, you know, this reminds me that this is just, we have to kind of, I think switch our focus, our viewpoint, because we're so used to Ohio State having this explosive offense under Ryan Day. And other than 2019, when they also had a very good defense, but even the last few years of the Urban Meyer era, especially 2018, you know, having a good offense, really good offense, but a shaky defense. This is the complete opposite. This is an elite Ohio State defense. This is a silver bullet defense. And this is a, frankly, a shaky offense. Not a terrible offense. But yeah, I agree with Chris here. The best damn defense in the land. It sure does look like it. I mean, people were wondering, is it Penn State or Michigan has the best defense in the land? Well, is it Ohio State or Michigan? Is now the question. Yeah, I don't know about the Dallin Hayden situation. I'm not sure about that. I certainly expected him. If it's about redshirting, I don't even want to hear that, because I thought that should have been out the window by now, the idea that you're going to redshirt Dallin Hayden. I don't get it. He is, you know, break glass in case of emergency. It must be pass pro. When I say I don't get it, we said earlier this week it must be. We cracked the code. It has to be pass pro. Reading between the lines, you don't even have to read between the lines that much with Ryan Day to – it has to be pass pro and probably blocking in general, not just pass pro, but just blocking in general. I would like to see at least once a game Kyle McCord keep the ball, and if they have to tell him it's a QB keeper no matter what, even if it's technically a zone read and there's no read, if you're faking the handoff and you're running the ball. Because every time the defensive ends are crashing in, if you're an opposing defensive coordinator – there's no threat of McCord running the ball. He did once last week. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe they will mix it in. Again, I'm not saying even twice a game. Just do it once a game. Do it once. It's there every time you want it. You're like, well, you don't want to risk him getting hurt now that Devin Brown's hurt. He doesn't have to take a hit. The defensive end's not even keying on him at all. If somehow somebody happens to be there, then slide and get down. It would be the easiest 10 yards, maybe more, that he'll ever get. Once a game, you got to mix that in to keep the defense honest and to get yourself a cheap first down. I don't get it. All right, we're going to hear from Bill Curlick pretty soon. Game went a little late. I was hoping to start the show a little earlier. Game went a little, it was flying by early, and then it just kind of sputtered along late. Yeah, I think I think Jaden Fielding's a really good kicker. I think if Fielding would have hit that field goal, I think our final score would have been 23-6. It would have kicked it deep. Probably would have. You know, stuff Penn State. Penn State got a little life there, was able to get a cheap touchdown late. Makes it look somewhat respectable, but 20-12, we will take that. We will take that. Sorry about this. I'm texting with Jay Book. So, yeah, keep those questions firing away. We're going to hear from Bill. Get the latest on recruiting in just a moment. Get my guest set up here. This is why I think I need a producer sometimes, so I don't have to do like 5 things at once. I can take all your questions and get the guests in line. It's a one-man band out here on the What We Learned Live. But again, Ohio State 20-12. A million times out of a million, we would have taken that entering this game, especially early in this game when it was looking shaky. I like the way the game started out for Ohio State. They come out there, they get a 3-and-out, they come right down the field. And even though it was just a field goal, they established right away who looked like the better team. Ohio State did right away. And you'd love to get a touchdown there, but like 3-and-out, 4 first downs, you establish Marvin, you get points on the board. That was big. That was big. Would have been bigger to go up 7-0, but just in a game like this to establish that, and I think we all thought that this was going to be a defensive struggle. I give the Silver Bullets a lot of credit. Drew Aller, man, shaky. His stats just look atrocious. They look a little better because of that last drive. I mean, before that, it was like just absolutely anemic. I'm trying to pull up the there we go. Especially, I tell you what, I'll pull up the box score in just a moment. Right now, we're going to hear from the dean of Ohio State football recruiting, Bill Curlick. Bill, good to see you, my friend. Before we get your thoughts on recruiting, which will be the crux of this visit, Your thoughts on this game? Buckeyes win this game 20-12. What a defensive performance from Ohio State.
Yeah, first thing I thought about, actually I was thinking about through a lot of this game, was how a lot of Buckeye fans were pretty disappointed last year in the defense and Jim Knowles, even though they made some improvements, you know, the big plays and all, they just really cost Ohio State last year. And the task going into this season was cut down the big plays. And obviously Ryan Day and Jim Knowles got their heads together, and Jim Knowles is taking care of that big play problem. And the defense, you know, it's just been a tremendous turnaround from 2 years ago or 3 years ago or four till where it is right now. Incredible, incredible performance today. Some of the stats, I don't know. I heard you say about bringing up the stats or box score, but some of the stats that I know of near the end of the game, Penn State failed on their first 15 third down conversion attempts. That's just incredible. At one point, Ohio State led Penn State as far as possessions in the other team's territory, 33 plays to 10. That's unbelievable. Yeah, the game was close, but the better team absolutely no doubt won. And Ohio State, hey, I heard Urban Meyer right after the game say Ohio State has the best resume in college football. And I would agree with that 100%. Two wins over top 10 teams.
You know, it's interesting. ESPN's Football Power Index, which is just computers analytics, coming into the game today, before they beat Penn State by 8, almost beat them by 14, almost beat them by 17, before they had a convincing win over Penn State, ESPN's Football Power Index had Ohio State ranked number 1 in the country.
Yeah,
interesting.
I only think you could make even more of the case now.
No doubt about it. All right, let's get to matters of recruiting. So, I don't know where you want to start. Guys at the game today that might be on commit watch. Just let's start with that.
Well, you know, back in the old days, and I can go back in the old days because I'm old. You know, after a game, you would say, well, you're going to have two or three commitments by midnight tonight or by noon tomorrow on Sunday. Well, it doesn't usually work that way anymore, much to the chagrin of a lot of recruiting fans. Kids just very rarely just go ahead and commit and then put it out there. They may commit silently, but they'll have to have time to get their edits ready and their videos and all. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just the way it is now. So, you know, when I say guys that I could see committing soon, I don't necessarily mean, the next couple hours here or whatever, they're going to announce it. When I say soon, I mean, well, maybe this weekend, but more likely in the next few days to even a week. But, you know, some of the guys there that I would certainly want to put in that category is one guy I saw last night, Eli Lee, the linebacker from Akron Hoban. I saw play in person last night, and what a performance he had. He was tremendous. You know, I think that he's a guy that you want to look for as a potential guy to commit sooner rather than later. Maxwell Riley from up in Northeast Ohio is an offensive lineman that not necessarily thinking about committing just quite yet, but it wouldn't shock me. Certainly Carter Lowe from Toledo Whitmer. We need offensive tackles. And when I say we, I mean the Buckeyes need offensive tackles. Carter Lowe is one of the best in the country for the class of 2025. And I think he is a guy that wouldn't shock me if he were to commit soon. Marquise Davis from up in Cleveland, running back, hasn't really indicated that he is necessarily going to commit soon, but you never know. He likes Ohio State a lot. And if you follow the visits, he's been to Ohio State way, way more than any school on his list. So he's another one. Certainly Buckeye fans would love to see Devin Sanchez, the 5-star, absolutely elite corner from Texas. He is here this weekend with his parents. They would love to see him commit soon. And again, I wouldn't necessarily predict it, but you just never know. Kids can get caught up in the excitement and know where they want to go and go ahead and make their decision. And one other guy I'd mention is the one guy that made an official visit this weekend, Amaris Williams, defensive end edge guy who is currently committed to Florida. I think any game that he went to at Florida this season would be hard pressed to match what he is seeing and has this weekend and what he saw today in the horseshoe.
What's up before we get to 2025, which is really like the crux of what's going on right now. What's anything latest with the 2024 class? How many do you think they will add? How are they sitting with Jordan Seaton? Just talk to me about the 2024 class before we move on to 2025.
Well, it's the number two class in the country in the 247 sports rankings. That says quite a bit right there. There are really three guys in particular to keep in mind. I mentioned one of them, Morris Williams. He is making his official visit this weekend. Deshaun Warner, an defensive end edge, who is committed to Kansas. He is going to make an official visit for the Michigan State game. He's another guy to keep in mind. And, of course, as you mentioned, Jordan Seaton, the guy they absolutely would take this class to the next level. I mean, he is the offensive tackle. And Ohio State has a legitimate shot at him. You kind of wish he was here this weekend, but he's going to be here the weekend of the Michigan State game and make an official visit that weekend. And a couple other guys just to keep in mind for 2024. Wide receiver Chance Robinson, he is committed to Miami right now, but he is going to be back at Ohio State for the Michigan State game. And then his teammate at Fort Lauderdale, St. Thomas Aquinas, linebacker Nicholas Rodriguez, will likely get back to Ohio State yet this season. He's a guy also to keep in mind. So those are some guys that I would be keeping in mind right now.
And then let's look at the 2025 class. It's not really early anymore, as you know. Yeah. I mean, they have just three commitments, but that's going to change, I would imagine, pretty quickly, as you alluded to. Just get into your early thoughts on the 2025 class and, just your general thoughts on where they stand right now.
Well, they've got a great start with Tavian St. Clair, who, in my mind, he is a top one, two, or three quarterback in the country for the class of 2025. I saw him play in person 2 weeks ago. I've seen him many times at camps, combines, that type of thing in person. And he's really a great quarterback prospect. And he's a guy that can sling the ball for sure. Great arm. But if you need him to, he absolutely can run the ball. I don't think he's going to be an Urban Meyer, Braxton Miller type quarterback, although, he has a lot of ability running it, but he can run when you need to. And I know Bucknuts fans, we see it all the time, Dave, as you do and I do. They want the quarterback to run a little bit if possible. So he would be the guy. Then you got Javon Boggs, the wide receiver from Florida, who has had a spectacular, just a great junior season. And then you've got Blake Woodby, an outstanding start to the cornerback commitments that Ohio State is going to get in this 2025 class. So that's a very good start. And you've got some guys that were in the horseshoe today. I mentioned Carter Lowe. He is certainly not the only one. Marquise Davis would be a big addition. I mean, Byron Lewis from Florida, great running back at Ohio State today. Jamie French, wide receiver that's committed to Alabama, is another one. He came up with the South Florida Express guys that have done so well for Ohio State. Their coach, Brett Getz, has been at Ohio State this weekend. So just a lot of big-time names out there, and a number of them were at that game today. And, of course, Devin Sanchez, we talked about him.
So you, Tavian St. Clair, you saw him against Jonathan Alder, I imagine. Division three, which is still good football. There's seven divisions in Ohio for those who don't know. So it's still like the upper half. Yeah, Division one is the biggest, seven is the smallest. He's D3, his team's 8-2. Leading them to the playoffs. I understand his offensive line is very, very small. He doesn't have that much around him. Tell me more about Tavian St. Clair.
Well, when you walk out on the field, you see the tallest, almost the biggest looking guy out there, and it's Tavian St. Clair. It's not an offensive tackle. So, it is not Division I competition, but I've seen Tavian St. Clair play against great competition at Ohio State's camps, seven on sevens, that type of thing. And I don't care who he's playing against. He is the real deal. He is an outstanding quarterback prospect. He's 6'4". He's 215 pounds, and he's not even finished his junior season in high school.
Well, Bill, I appreciate your insights. I know you have a lot of work to do. Make sure all of our listeners and viewers, please get on Bucknuts and read Bill's work. He's the best in the business. He is the dean of Ohio State football recruiting. Bill, thank you very much for joining What We Learned Live. I appreciate it, my friend.
Appreciate it, Dave. And Bucknuts fans are going to have a lot of reactions by the end of today from those top recruits that were at the game today. I'll have a recruits react, and I got a feeling that there's going to be plenty of reaction to that game today.
Ooh, I like it. I like it. A little foreshadowing there. Good stuff. Great stuff, Bill. Appreciate it, man.
Okay, take care, Dave.
All right. Thank you. All right, I meant to ask Bill about his I promised I'd ask him about his Browns. I lied to him. Bill, I'm sorry about that. You'll have to text me. Shout out to Bill's Browns. I just picked them up in my fantasy. I'm in three fantasy leagues, but my dynasty league, my keeper league, I picked up the Browns defense. They are the number one defense in football. I'm saying this as a Bengal fan. They've looked like it every week, including against my Bengals in week one, where they made the Bengals look like a freshman team that's winless playing a varsity powerhouse. We're going to hear from Jay Book in just a moment. I see some people are worried that there's Michigan trolls in the comments. I don't know what Michigan people are trolling about right now. Are they stealing our signs? How'd they get in here? All right. So here's a guy that never steals signs. He's Jonah Booker. And when he does it the legal way, if he does it all. So, J-Book, your general thoughts. I mean, 20 to 12, we all would have taken that coming into the game. Your thoughts on this win?
Dave, if you can see this smile, the defense, man. I'm so proud of that Ohio State defense. Like, it's been years that we've seen a defense just absolutely just pin their ears back and just get after that opposing team. I'm so proud of what Jim Knowles has done with this defense, Dave. Like, Jermaine Matthews, my goodness, what an absolute stud. I mean, I'm not sure if you guys have went over like the stats in the second half, but you look at that Penn State offense, second half, 4 plays, 16 yards punt, 3 plays, 2 yards punt, 3 plays, 9 yards punt, 3 plays, negative 5 yards punt, 4 plays, 6 yards turnover on downs, 8 plays, negative 22 yards, and then on the very last garbage time, 73 yards in the TD. That's beautiful, Dave. 1 for 16 on third down. Absolutely masterpiece. Jim Knowles, tip of the cap. I mean, this was kind of your litmus test to see what this defense is all about, and they pass with flying colors.
JT, once again, I mean, I thought he played well the entire game, but something about that fourth quarter against Penn State, he's like, yeah, I'm just going to take the game over. How about we do that? Love what I'm seeing at a number 44. He's playing at that All-American level.
He absolutely stepped it up. And right now, and as we started to head into November, you want to be playing your best football, Dave. You're starting to see that from JT as well as this defensive line. Just absolutely dominated that Penn State front seven. I mean, JT was going up. A lot of people believe that Penn State left tackle. A lot of people believe he's going to be a top five, top 10 pick. He took him behind the woodshed today, Dave, and it was absolutely masterful. I mean, when you look at the offense, definitely left a lot to be desired there. I thought Ryan Day, whenever he called those runs up the middle on first down, put the offense off schedule, second and nine, second and eight. That right there put a lot of pressure on Kyle McCord, Marvin Harrison Jr. to convert a lot of those third and longs. But other than that, man, I mean, that we can go and pick apart the special teams because there are, you know, several special teams, not only the muff punt, but when you're taught at an early age as a punt returner, they say put your heels on the 10-yard line. And if the ball goes over your head, you let it go into the end zone. I thought fielding the punt inside the 10-yard line also put the offense in bad predicament. So that's something they definitely need to clean up there. But my goodness, Dave, are the silver bullets back, Dave? What do you think, man?
Heck yeah, they are. And I know Penn State's offense isn't that good, but they made them just anemic today. Until that last garbage drive they had, which was aided by, you know, some sympathy penalties, I will call them. Some sympathy penalties in Penn State's down 20-6. They had a total of 6 yards the entire second half up until then.
Yeah.
Penn State had 6 yards the entire second half, as you illustrated earlier, going through like the early drives. 6 yards. They had like up to 24, then the Buckeyes got them on a big loss with a sack Maybe it was 8 yards. It was either eight or it was definitely single digits. It was either eight or six. Doesn't really matter. The silver bullets are back. We'll get to people want us to talk about McCord. We will, but I know you wanted to say something else about the defense.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, you people are going to say they're going to try to poo-poo this win and say, oh, Penn State's garbage, Penn State's offense, this and that. This was an offense that was coming in that was averaging 40-plus points a game. They were never a very explosive offense, but they were very effective being methodical. They were averaging about 7.9 plays per game to score a touchdown, but they were doing that extremely well. This Ohio State defense, they were holding Penn State to 108. They held them to 185 yards, 12 points. 73 of those yards came from Penn State on that last drive with 2:12 left. So overall, you know, you toss out that garbage time touchdown, you're talking about you're holding a Penn State top 10 team to under 125 yards for the entire game going into 2 minutes left. That is absolutely great football. Now, you're going to get on social media. You're going to have a lot of people who are rival fans, they're going to try to poo-poo on this win and say Penn State's not who we thought they were. It doesn't matter to me. Anytime you're a defense and you can go out and hold a top 10 team to under 200 yards, 1 for 6 on third down, 1.9 yards per rush, 3.4 yards per pass, that is absolutely outstanding football. I don't care what anyone has to say about what Penn State brings to the table as far as their offense.
Yeah, if anybody's like, oh, I knew this was going to happen, Penn State's not that good, I certainly hope they put their money where their mouth was. Ohio State was only favored by 4 by kickoff, 4.5, depending on where you look, 4.5, 4, and they win this game by 8, and that's because of a cheap touchdown late. So, anybody who's poo-pooing this win can go get lost. That was a hell of a good win for Ohio State to win that game, and suffocating defensive performance. And if they're going to win it all this year, it's going to be because of this defense. Kyle McCord. All right, now he's not awful, but he's not good. His ball placement leaves a lot to be desired, and I'm being kind. What are your thoughts on McCord?
If you're a box reader, you can be like, oh, McCord was knocking on the door for 300. but if you really watch the game, he did not play well, Dave. I mean, he left a lot out there. He could have easily threw for 350. Penn State could not guard Ohio State wide receivers at all. Now, you did have a few drops there from the wide receivers, but the anticipation with Kyle, like, I don't know why he goes in certain periods of the game, especially in the first half, he goes into like a little shell, like he kind of like dazes off. He's lackadaisical. When he went 5 for 5 early on, those are scripted plays. He knew what to expect from those games because typically when you're going into a college football game, the first 15 to 20 plays of the game, those are all scripted. You practice them all week, so you know what to expect pretty much. Once they got out of those scripted plays and he started to really slow down, that's kind of what bothers you. The thing that was worrying me the most, Dave, is because the defense was playing outstanding, I thought that early on they gave the offense 4 to 5 possessions to go up early by 2 touchdowns, 10, 15, or 17 points, and the offense could not capitalize. They could not capitalize at all when the defense was playing outstanding. I will say this. Ohio State right now will probably be number one in the country once the playoff polls are released. I will say this, for the simple fact that the playoff committee is going to give a lot of credit for beating two top 10 teams at the time. They will give them credit for the way the defense has performed. But Kyle McCord is not playing at a championship level caliber right now. He cannot perform the way he's performing to beat Georgia, to beat Michigan. But there is still room to grow. He still can get better. There's not, it's not to be so much down on him, because there are moments when you look at Kyle and it's like, that's a heck of a throw. He extended the drive. There's other times you're just like, what in the world are you doing? So it's still part of the growing pains. They just need the consistency from him on a more regular basis. And if they can get that the way the defense is playing, Dave, this team is going to be – they're going to be a tough out, especially come November. And I will say this before we move on to the next topic. I thought the offensive line – did a darn good job today. I know they didn't add, they didn't have the yards per carry that they really want to, but going into this game, there was so much talk about the Penn State front seven being absolutely loaded with NFL talent, how they're going to be able to handle the pressure from that Penn State front seven. Yeah, it hurts Penn State that they lost Chop Robinson early on, but they still have a lot of quality guys with Abdul Carter and those other guys. And I thought that going up against Penn State, this was going to be the biggest test for this offensive line. And they held up extremely well in the pass rushing attack from that Penn State defensive front. So, hey, good job, guys. Hey, get better. You're not where you need to be, but you play better than what I thought they were going to play going into this game.
So Penn State knew coming in, especially they knew if Emeka played, he'd be limited. There's a really good chance he wouldn't play, and he didn't play. So they know, even if Emeka was out there, they're like, we're going to make sure that we cover Marvin Harrison Jr. We're going to double him. We're going to shadow him. So, like, Marvin Harrison Jr. was a wanted man coming in, and he still shows out. Even with Kyle McCord throwing the ball, like, you know, all around, he still was making plays. And, again, Kyle's not bad. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying – right now, he's not playing good either. We got to call a spade. He's like average right now. Because you said sometimes he's making good throws, but Marvin bailed him out sometimes. And sometimes Kyle put the ball in the money. But my goodness, Jay Book. I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. I mean, we've seen so many great receivers come through here. I know, not breaking news, he might be the best we've seen. And the Indianapolis Colts might back their way into getting Marvin Harrison Jr. Early in the first round.
And the thing that you have to look at about this team, Dave, is the defense is so good right now. They're playing at such a high clip that the defense is always going to keep you in games. That's the big thing. Number one, they're going to keep you in games. Now, when you have a chess piece like in Marvin Harrison Jr., he's the one that can tip the scales in your favor for you to win that game. You just have to make sure that Kyle McCord is not doing anything to hurt the offense. And I will say this again, Dave, I felt like Ryan Day at times put the offense off schedule by calling those first down runs early on when you're putting Kyle McCord in 2nd and 9, 2nd and 8. That right there is putting your quarterback in a very difficult situation that I don't necessarily believe that he needs to be in. When you look at Kyle McCord playing at his highest level, Dave, what is he doing? They're going more tempo. They're letting him pick the pace up. When they're going methodical, run it on first down for 1 yard, drop back for 2nd down, throw a short route, or run it on 2nd down. Now you're in 3rd and long. That's when you start to see McCord get into a tough situation. So I would like to see him do a little bit more tempo, because I thought once they were in tempo this game, that's when you start to see him really start to light it up with Marv.
Yeah, I wrote that down in my notes, and then I had to kind of cross it out. I was like, look, finally Ohio State's using tempo and it's working. And then it's like, well, it was there for like 5 minutes, and then they decided not to use it for whatever reason. But I mean, at one point, I'm sure Ryan Day, probably very, very early in the game, thinking Penn State's offense can't do anything. Like, let's just at the end of the first half, you know, I know Joel Klatt, many were wondering, why don't you take a shot here? Ohio State had the ball at their own 17. They're up by 4. I didn't mind it. I'm usually like, be aggressive. But Penn State couldn't do anything. I want to ask you about Dallin Hayden. I've had questions about that. We started getting comments about that. I'm flummoxed. I thought the idea of redshirting him was out the window. Maybe it still is, but like, why not get Dallin Hayden out there today? I thought Mayan overall played well. I don't know why Dallin Hayden is just buried on this bench, Jay Book.
Yeah, I think Dallin definitely gives you a lot more boom when it comes to the running back position. There's been a lot of talk that they're concerned about his pass blocking ability. They're a little worried that this Penn State front was going to be able to put some pressure on Kyle McCord, and that was going to require Dallin Hayden to get in there and stick his nose in somebody's chest and have to step up and make a big boy pass block. And that was something that he struggled up against Purdue. So I do believe that is one of the reasons why that you didn't see him a lot. And just looking at what you're getting from Maya Williams and Chip, those are very good backs, but they're not explosive back, Dave. I think that if you could have at least got Dallin in there for a change of pace to kind of throw them off guard, I thought that it would really help this offense. And you said it, Dave. You know, I mean, the redshirt thing, it really it really confuses me because you're probably going to start number one once the playoff committee released the polls. It's all hands on deck. Regardless of if you're trying to redshirt a guy, retain somebody's eligibility, you're in the mode now like, hey, we're trying to win this. Because not to try to get ahead of yourself, Dave, ourselves right now, but you look at the schedule that's coming up ahead. Ohio State should be undefeated going into Michigan. And the way this defense is playing, once they get that taste in their mouth and they get that momentum rolling, this defense is – they're hell on wheels. They gotta figure out the offense and get that offense playing at a more consistent level, because once they can become a more complete football team, this team has the capability to make a run in the playoffs and beat Michigan up in Ann Arbor, because you have a defense now that can travel. You have a defense once the weather starts to get bad in Big Ten country. You have a defense that can travel. You got to be able to have a consistent rushing attack that can travel once the weather starts to turn bad. And I think a guy like Dallin Hayden can give you that opportunity whenever someone's banged up, because Trevion Henderson, is he in? Is he out? Is he in? Is he out? As much as we love Trevion Day, he's not someone that you can necessarily depend on right now. You've seen it throughout his career. Ever since he's a freshman, you don't know if he's going to be in one week or out one week. You don't know if he's hurt one week or healthy one week. So I just think that with the stakes so high, having a talented player like Dallin Hayden sitting on the sideline, it doesn't do the program or the offense any justice.
You and I haven't talked about anything. We haven't talked. We didn't talk during the game. We didn't text or anything. When the game's 10-6 in the second half, Ohio State has the ball at Penn State's half-yard line, third and goal from the inches away. Were you like me? Were you yelling, quarterback, QB sneak, QB sneak, QB sneak? Instead, they just slow handoff to Maya. Yeah. No chance. He gets stuffed for 2 yards and then minus 2 yards. And then he had the failed pass. Well, I mean, completed pass on fourth down. I mean, What's Ryan? He did a quarterback sneak last week. Why not do a QB sneak right there?
Just do the quarterback sneak. And some people disagree with me on Twitter. After you got into that fourth down, I would have taken the points, Dave. At this point, when you're up 10-6, points are a premium. Your defense is playing lights out. You go up 7 right now, and the way your defense is shutting them down, because at that point in the game, Penn State only had about 20 yards of offense, and everybody on both sides of the ball, they're struggling to get points. You go up 7, you're feeling it a little bit. You can take a sigh of relief and say, all right, we won at 7. We didn't get 7, but we're about to kick the ball off up 7 points with my defense playing absolutely stonewall football. So at this point, they won the game, Dave, but you have to look back and say, here we go again, short yardage. And a lot of people blame the players, Dave, when it comes to short yardies, but you also have to question Ryan Day some of the play calls. Yes. when you're on short yardies. Like, you go back to the Notre Dame, you're on 4th-and-1, you run a reverse with a Mecca. You're on 4th-and-1 on your goal line here, and you're running a swing pass to Carnell Tate. If at that point, if I'm going to throw the football, I got to have Maserati Marv, as Gus like to say, with the football in his hands to try to make a play if it's 4th-and-1 in a top 10 matchup.
I mean, Gus, just when I think like he can't like entertain us anymore, he comes up with Maserati Marv. Marvelous Maserati Marv. I love it. I absolutely love it.
But I'm happy, Dave, man. This is a great, great win for the program. Yes. This is a great win for the program. Like, I'm going to have the rest of my Saturday, man, with a smile on my face. Like, hey, the Silver Bullets are back, baby. Like, the defense is playing some high-level caliber football, because Ohio State has won a lot of football over the last several years, and we've gotten away with just out-athleting people and saying, man, the defense left a lot to be desired. Right now, you're just seeing an absolute elite defense, and that right there is beautiful to see, Dave. I'm fired up, man, for this win.
My Maserati goes 185. I lost my license. Now I can't drive. Oh, I love that line. Any final thoughts before I let you go, my friend?
That's it, man. Hey, great win. I think Wisconsin, that's still going to be a hard-hitting affair. Wisconsin, they don't have an offense that's going to be able to keep up with Ohio State. The biggest thing for Ohio State, Dave, is injuries, getting healthy. is you better believe that Luke Fickell will have that team ready to go. Ohio State should be able to go up there and handle business. But just getting everyone healthy and just learn from the, on the offense, you got to be able to, when the defense is playing that elite, playing that well, put teams away early on. Like, step on their throat, man. Have that killer mentality.
Yeah, it seemed like they were that close to just putting Penn State away. I mean, 20-6 basically was putting them away. But I'm with you, man. Like, we can, like, pick apart certain things, and we got to call a spade with certain things. Like, Kyle McCord was shaky today, but this was not a good win. It was a great win. A great win. Great yep. stuff is always out of a great one. Jonah Booker, appreciate it, my friend.
All right, talk to you next week, Dave.
Yes, sir. Thank you. He is the one and only Jonah Booker. Great hearing from Jay Book. Great hearing from the Dean of Ohio State Football Recruiting, Bill Kurlick. We'll hear from Patrick Murphy and Steve Hellwagon after post-game interviews, which are going on right now inside the Victory Tower at Ohio Stadium. Most of you probably know that. That's where post-game interviews are at, inside that Victory Tower. The third floor, the second floor is the big recruiting area. It's pretty nice in there. And the third floor, not quite as nice because it's the media area. And it's a cluster of clusters in there. For those who don't know, and you hear that, hear the bell going off in there in that interview room. I mean, the bell isn't going off by the time Coach Day gets in there and the players. But, yeah. And the visiting post-game press conference is not in that room. It's in the opposite side of the field, the opposite tower, the one closer to Morrill Tower there on the – it would be the southwest side of the stadium. So, all right, let's hit me up with some questions. I know. Where are all the Penn State fans at, Dave, as Jeremiah Yoder on YouTube is asking. I know they've – I have enjoyed the Penn State fans all week. They've been increasing the views of our podcast all week. We've had very good views anytime we talk about Penn State. Did anybody see before the game when James Franklin and Ryan Day – James Franklin gave a big bear hug and then said something. He covered his mouth and said something. They both started laughing. I would bet anything that had something to do with Michigan, right? I mean, had to. What else would he be like, ha, oh, and they're both like, ha, ha. You know, it had to be like something like about like, can you believe that they got busted for that? It was, you know, whatever they said. That's one thing Ohio State and Michigan – or excuse me, Ohio State and Penn State fans have in common. Don't like Michigan. Like Michigan State and Ohio State fans, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So I'd like to say the Michigan State-Michigan game is going to be interesting tonight, but it won't be. Even if, you know, Michigan doesn't know Michigan State signs, Michigan State's really bad at the football. You never know. I mean, that is, you know, I mean, that is a rivalry game. But Michigan's favored by 24.5. Michigan State is a shell of what they should be. Well, that's nice of you. I'm not the only guy that asked tough questions, though. I appreciate that, Eddie, on YouTube for the shout out there. yeah, people are trying to. I would say I could read lips. Ended said they must be saying, quote, that POS Harbaugh. Yeah, I'd say I could. I'm pretty good at reading lips, but, you know, when you cover your face up, it makes it a little harder. But they were definitely talking about Harbaugh, if you ask me. I'm not a Jed. You guys hate James Franklin. I don't hate James Franklin. Maybe because he's 1-9 against Ohio State. It's like, I don't hate him. Kind of like Notre Dame. I don't really hate Notre Dame. They're what, like 0-6 against Ohio State in my lifetime? It's like, listen, man, there's only enough hate to go around. I'm not saying I'm not saying I love James Franklin, but I see a lot of Ohio State fans that like hate him. I don't hate him. Like, he's okay. He's all right. I'm kind of glad he's Penn State's coach, right? 1-9. It's Ohio State's best string ever against Penn State. Ohio State's been good overall against Penn State since Penn State's joined the conference, but this is the only time they've won 7 straight. They hadn't even won 6 straight up until last year. Now they've won 7 straight. Yeah, exactly. James Franklin's all right. He's just not elite. Yeah. I'm curious what Penn State fans think. Are you good? Like, let's say they go 10-2 again this year. They lose to Ohio State and Michigan, which seems pretty damn likely. You okay with that? Do you feel like if you got rid of James Franklin, it could get worse? You know, almost like a Frank Solich situation, although I don't know if he stayed at Nebraska if really they had staying power, even though people love to bring that up, even though I just brought it up. But seriously, if you're sitting there at 10-2, 11-2, if you win your bowl game every year, are you good with that if you're Penn State? You know, or are you thinking, man, we've got to like figure out a way to get past Ohio State and Michigan, because now you're 1-9 against Ohio State in the James Franklin era. If we have any Penn State fans out there, let me know. Let me know what you think. And today wasn't really competitive. You look at the total yards. I mean, Ohio State almost doubled the total yards. Penn State got that late touchdown to make it look a lot better than what it could have looked. I'm just really curious. I'm sure we don't have too many Penn State fans tuning in. Guaranteed, we have a ton of Penn State fans tuning in if Penn State would have won. They were waiting in the bushes. A lot of people picked Penn State to win this game. Straight up, not just against the spread. General Chrome on YouTube, where was Hayden? We talked about this. I know a lot of you are just joining. I'm not, you know, fire away with any questions you guys have. I don't know. I'm surprised by it too. You know, I'm not shocked because apparently they're still trying to redshirt him, I guess. I don't know. I thought that would be out the window by now. Or they're thinking, we'll just, you know, as long as we have two healthy backs, which they had today, or three including Pryor, four including Hayden, unless we have to play him, don't play him. I don't know. I wish I could give you guys a good answer. Early in the year when people were asking, why isn't Hayden playing? I'm like, I think because they're trying to redshirt him. And then Ryan Day confirms that. And then they had needed him last week against Purdue because after, you know, they already were without Trey and Mayan. And then obviously Chip got, you know, what looked like a concussion. So they had to play Dallin. And he looks good. He played well, 11 carries for 76 yards and a touchdown. And you're thinking, he's got to play this week, right? And he doesn't. I don't have a good answer for you, but I did think Mayan ran the ball well, Chip at times as well. Chip got benched after missing a block, it looked like to me. I know some of you pointed that out as well. I will rewatch the game. Probably Monday morning is when I usually do it. After we do our podcast Monday, I'll rewatch the game, and then I'll do a written version of what we learned. That was the genesis of this podcast, was we used to do the written version of what we learned right after the game. And now I do the podcast right after the game, and I do the written version of what we learned every Monday. Let's see if post-game interviews are still going on. I'm curious what the mood is. It's got to be a very good mood. Jay Book said it. I mean, we can pick apart certain things, and we will. We're analyzing what we learned from this game, that Kyle McCord's ball placement's got to get a lot better, for example. But overall, this is a hell of a win. All right. Yeah, fire away with questions. If I have missed how many more games? Yeah, if I missed any of your questions, please keep firing away. There's been so many. Appreciate all of you joining me. There's a lot of people here. I love it. I absolutely love it. Neil Harris on YouTube. How many more games can he play? He can play in two more. He's played in two so far. So he can play in two more. So maybe they're thinking, let's just not play him until Michigan and then, you know, maybe the CFP or whatever. I don't know. They can play as many as four and still redshirt. So he can play in two more games and still redshirt. I don't know. Doug on YouTube, did Kenyatta Jackson record any stats besides snaps? I'll have to go back and check. I don't think so, but I saw him get pressure at least once, and it's good to see him getting in there. Man, they were so disruptive, and I love some of the twists and stunts that they were doing. You'd blitz a linebacker up the middle, and then, you know, a D-end would twist around, or a D-tackle would I mean, I just – Jim Knowles. Hats off, Jim Knowles. Hats off to Jim Knowles. I mean, that was – and I, again, Penn State's defense – or excuse me, Penn State's offense is not going to be confused with a great one, but that was a great defensive performance, and the Silver Bullets are back, baby. Silver Bullets are back. Because even against shaky offenses last year, they were giving up big plays. Penn State and Sean Clifford scored 31 against them last year, and that's with Tui Moloau taking over the game in the fourth quarter. Yeah, if you forget, the game was 44-31 last year. Very fitting that Ohio State's score was 44 when number 44 took that game over. But again, the highlights of this game, JT, once again, JT is playing like an All-American. The defensive line overall, I love it. The defense overall, even without Denzel Burke, I mean, they just completely – Drew Aller's stats look embarrassing. We even had a Michigan fan jump in here and say, now I know why Ohio State didn't really recruit Drew Aller. It really wasn't that. It's really – they would have – they did late offer him. It's just Penn State was in on him early. Ohio State had Quinn Ewers who reclassified. It was just a weird storm. I won't call it a perfect storm, maybe an imperfect storm. Drew Aller seems like a nice kid from a nice family. I'm not going to talk any bad about him. They grew up a Buckeye fan. There was a pregame show showed him and his mom and – you know, going to games as Buckeye fans, him and his mom and his dad, Buckeye fans. So it's just one of those things. He could have gone to Michigan. Michigan was in on him before Ohio State was, and he picked Penn State. man, Ohio State was all over him, and he was shaky. You know, a lot of times it was because of Ohio State's defense was why Drew Aller was shaky, no doubt about it. But then there were times where Drew Aller just is not accurate with the football. He can't throw the ball down the field. I wondered coming into this game, because Penn State was among the worst teams in the country as far as throwing the ball down the field, you know, and I wondered, is that because they haven't shown it yet? Are they saving it? Which didn't seem likely. You would think you'd want to at least practice it, because they were blowing everybody out. But we knew we would find out today. And we found out they just can't throw the ball down the field at all. Give Ohio State credit. But also, Drew Aller was shaky. But JT looks like an All-American. Jim Knowles, hats off to Jim Knowles. Marvin Harrison Jr., just give him, if he stays healthy, give him the Biletnikoff right now. It's like the old Maurice Claret quote entering his senior year of high school. He said, "They already have my name on that Mr. Football trophy. I just have to drive down to Columbus and get it." Yeah, I mean, Marvin Harrison, even the Biletnikoff committee is usually asleep. I think they might even wake up enough for this one. Marvin Harrison Jr.'s name is already on that Biletnikoff trophy. He just has to go down and get it. I think to Orlando. Biletnikoff headquarters is actually in Tallahassee, the Tallahassee quarterback club. But I think they give that ad off the ESPN awards in Orlando. Doesn't matter. Marvin better get it. He should have got it last year. They gave it to the kid from Tennessee because the kid from Tennessee had better stats. But you couldn't find one coach in college football that would have taken that kid over Marvin Harrison Jr. How great would we be downfield if we didn't have Marv? Yeah, not good at all, Linz. Linz Breezy on YouTube. Yeah, not good. It would have been pretty bad. And you know, maybe they were thinking that it looked like a Mecca could have played if it was absolutely necessary. I like that they held him out. I think they learned their lesson last year trying to bring JSN back too early. You know, why risk it if you don't need to? I love that. That's one thing. I mean, you know, you got a stud out there. Milk that cow, baby. I mean, it's just, why not? Why not? You've got perhaps the best receiver to ever come through Ohio State, and they have an endless list of first-round picks and second-round picks that have showed out, like Michael Thomas, third-round picks, Terry McLaurin, on and on and on. Chris Carter was a supplemental pick. I mean, to call somebody the best receiver to come through Ohio State, that is immense praise, and I think we're seeing it, though. I think we're seeing it. And he had a bad game last week for his standards, and still had over 100 yards and a touchdown. So, but he had like three drops last week at least. I thought he had four. I think he was only credited for three. Had a drop again today, but Marvin Harrison Jr. is just special. He's absolutely special. Kyle McCord's got to clean up his ball placement. There's just no doubt about it. There's no sugarcoating it. And I would love to see – I meant to ask J-Book this. This is one thing I meant to ask J-Book before he dipped out of here, because that was me saying, you know, is there anything else you want to say? Wasn't like J-Book got out of here early. I don't know why Coach Day is averse to the QB sneak. He should have once last week against Purdue, and not – making sure Kyle McCord, just to keep the defense honest, doesn't keep the ball once again. I just don't get it. You know, again, I'm not asking for Kyle McCord to run the ball even three times per game. Like, once would be nice, twice. Patrick Murphy.
Hey.
Live from Ohio Stadium. All right, you're before we get, like, the biggest thing from interviews, what's your takeaway from this 20-12 Ohio State victory over Penn State?
Slugfest, right? I mean, how else do you describe a game like that? This defense is legit. I don't think you can question that at all at this point. Look, Penn State's offense certainly has not it's not been electrifying, similar to what we've seen with Ohio State. Drew Aller looked uncomfortable, but Ohio State certainly had a part to play in that, right? The Buckeyes got pressure on him. You know, they limited what was open for him downfield. I mean, it's just, this is about the defense today. The offense did what it needed to do, and you know, there still needs to be improvements there. But when you have a defense like this, you're going to be in games at the very least. And if your offense has players like a Marvin Harrison Jr. or a Cade Stover, the two guys that I think really stepped up, and Mayan Williams to some degree too, but you know, you're going to be able to win some big games. And now they've done that twice, once here and once on the road.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, biggest things, I'm sure it was a very happy interview room for the Buckeyes. Your biggest takeaways from post-game interviews?
Yeah, Ryan Day, I mean, some of that I just touched on with the defense. Yeah, I think it's still so weird for Buckeye fans. It's weird for me to watch this team win ugly. And ugly is probably not the right term, but just win, you know, in a way that's different than what they've done. They're not scoring 45 points a game. They're not – You know, they're not driving up and down the field and things like that. Even in a game against Penn State, another really good team last year, it was, what was it, 41-33 or something like that? I mean, this was just a whole different game.
44-31.
There you go. So it's just, I think Ryan is okay with it, but it's just different for everybody. And he talked about, you know, Marv and what he did. It's second straight year. He's had 10 catches that went for first downs. Another just ridiculous day for him. And it's funny. We talked to him afterwards and he was asked about, because Ryan said, you know, he doesn't know, he hasn't watched every player in the country, but he doesn't know how Marvin isn't in the conversation for all of the major individual awards at this point. And Marvin was asked about, like, does the Heisman mean anything to you? And he said, well, it'd be a really big honor to win it. And which, yeah, he said it's not a motivating factor, but it was nice to hear somebody actually admit, like, yeah, I'd like to win that. He was great. We talked to JT Tuimoloau as well. He talked about just like the energy that this defense has right now. They know that there was the talk early about the defensive line and not getting the sacks, and that's not what he's focused on. They want to get pressure. He knew the sacks would come, you know, and they have. They've started to get there a bit more. But, you know, like right now, it's just kind of this team effort led by this defense, I think, is the way I'd kind of phrase what's going on with the Buckeyes. And that was kind of the message from the press conference.
Yeah, I'm not seeing a good defense out of Ohio State. I'm seeing an elite defense, defense. This is exactly what I wanted to see from this defense. JT is playing like a superstar, and they were without their number one corner, who I think is going to be a first-round pick, Denzel Burke, to do that. I mean, they just look tremendous. I want to ask you about Kyle McCord. Again, I want to be clear. Kyle's not bad, but, like, he's got to get a lot better with his ball placement if they're going to get where they want to. Now, maybe with his defense, and they won a national championship with Craig Krenzel, but Craig would you know, tuck the ball and run and pick up, you know, key first downs. You don't see that out of Kyle. But Kyle's got the arm talent. You see some throws, it's like, wow, that was an NFL throw. And you see like two or three throws in a row, you're like, what the hell is he doing? Like, the ball placement just needs to get a lot better with Kyle.
Yeah, and real quick, you mentioned Denzel Burke. Coach Day said that he was close to being able to go this week. That's and true. They want him. They believe that he'll be back in practice, but they'd like to have him have a full week of practice to be able to play next week. So sounds positive there. But yeah, for me with Kyle, it's the consistency of it. Because as you said, you see it on some throws that it's there, right? And then there's other throws where it's like, what is he looking at there? You know, like, how did he miss by that much? You know, there were even a couple caught today. Marvin had one, I remember, in the first half that, you know, it was catchable for Marvin because he's Marvin Harrison Jr., but it wasn't a good throw. And then there are some that, you know, he reads the defense and makes some really good plays. And I don't know if it's when he stops thinking and just plays when he can really when he can really kind of get going. That's something they certainly need to figure out. But I do think you make a good point. I don't know if he's Craig Krenzel, but it reminds me a lot of like a Mac Jones. And I know that offense was really explosive, but like Mac Jones isn't the best quarterback in the world. And I think when you have all the weapons,
he was accurate. Like, Kyle's not accurate at all.
Yeah. But I think when Kyle has his full complement, let's remember Noah Mecca today. And I think, we discussed this on the message boards a little bit when I wrote about, I thought Emeka was going to be the guy they would miss the most if he couldn't play. There are a couple throws today where Emeka makes big plays and he's Emeka Ibuka for a reason. And, you know, I think when he's out there, it certainly makes life easier on Kyle. Carnell Tate's starting to come on, but I get it. I get what you're saying. I don't mean to necessarily compare Kyle and Mac Jones. I'm just saying with the defense that's playing this well, you just need a guy who's not going to make a big mistake. He hasn't done that, really. There have been a couple throws where they could have gone the other way, but it hasn't yet. And I think with the way the defense is playing, you just need to make the plays to win the game, especially in these really big games, right?
That's exactly right. Kyle doesn't have to be great. He's got to be better, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
Beat Michigan. I don't think anybody else on this schedule, you know, I was not worried about at Wisconsin. I'm still not writing it off, trust me. At Wisconsin at night. I've been around long enough. I'm not writing that game off, especially with Luke's going to have his guys ready. But with Mordecai probably out with the broken hand, Wisconsin, he wasn't even looking that good with Mordecai. It's really just Michigan. He just needs to be solid. You know, if he can be solid, this defense is going to, especially now that Michigan doesn't know their signals ahead of time, I think just a solid Kyle McCord will be plenty good enough. Okay, we have a question for you here. It seemed loud on TV. Patrick, Doug wants to know, Patrick, was the crowd loud throughout?
Yeah, for sure. It's always a little bit difficult to tell when we're in the press box because we're behind giant thick glass and they didn't open the windows today, which was unfortunate. But it was definitely loud. We came down in the fourth quarter. Obviously, as Penn State's driving there at the end, this place gets nuts. And I don't know if it's as loud as any place in the country. You know, you can debate other places, Penn State, obviously Madison, you mentioned, but certainly it's up there. And today was, I'm always impressed with what Ohio Stadium can do on these big noon games. I know people complain about them, but they still seem to get up for them and take care of whatever they need to do pregame to be loud. I thought it was pretty impressive again today.
Before we bring in Steve Hellwagon and let you go, any news on Devin Brown? Was that brought up at the press conference?
Coach Day didn't say that, kind of update on what he did. I know they said on the broadcast it was an ankle sprain. He did say that they had a number of plays put in for him. He mentioned specifically like a 4-minute drive towards the end of the game that he thought he would have been able to kind of melt things away a little bit more. So I think it would have been interesting to see what they did with Devin. I know I said last week I'm not a huge fan of kind of quarterbacks coming in and out, but if they're going to do it, I would like to see what the plan is there. You hope it's something where they can, treat it this week, tape him up, and he'll be good to go. Obviously, they struggled in the red zone without him, right? The play at the end, I don't know. If I were Coach Day, I would have kicked the field goal when they went for it on, I think it was the 2-yard line, fourth and goal, the throw to Carnell Tate. Certainly you want to think if that's the way you're going to score in the red zone, then you're going to need Devin back. A sprained ankle could be bad. I mean, in theory, but it certainly, I was worried he did something worse based on kind of the slow-mo replay. You saw his face just like, pain. So I think it's maybe better news you hope for him.
All right, my friend, get back to work. We're going to bring in Steve Hellwagon. Thank you, Patrick.
All right. See you, Dave.
Patrick Murphy from Ohio Stadium. Let's bring in Steve Hellwagon. Steve, I'm going to get your thoughts on postgame interviews in just a moment. Just your biggest takeaway from this big win for the Buckeyes, 20-12 over Penn State. I know it played out kind of like what you were expecting. You thought this would be like an old school defensive struggle, and it was.
Yes, it was a crazy old school defensive struggle with a lot of conservative play calling, and anytime anybody tried to take a chance or take a shot, that was quickly swept away by the opposing defense. Kind of like you shouldn't even be thinking about trying to do that was kind of the reaction. But Ohio State finally found some traction, and it was a little bit with the run game, but it was much more with Kyle McCord throwing the ball to Marvin Harrison Jr. and Cade Stover. And they had a drive where they got it, as the one maybe you guys are referencing, they got it down there to the 1-yard line, 2-yard line, whatever. I think Devin Brown got tackled at the 1, and then they got knocked back to the 2. But you got to score a touchdown there. And I didn't have a problem going for it there either. But that needs to be a touchdown in that situation. And, I'm not looking to find fault with anything that they really did here today, because Penn State is, again, this damn glass ceiling for them. And again, I don't mean to make light of it, but it just, they punch and they punch and they punch and they just can't seem to get to Ohio State's level or Michigan's level. And, on a consistent basis, I mean, this is 7 wins in a row in the series, 11 of the last 12, let me tell you, if both Ohio State and Penn State wanted to remain rivals on an annual basis, it would have happened. Those things just didn't. Somebody in Chicago didn't assign one of them dumbass schools 3 rivals just on their own whim. Ohio State got assigned 1. Penn State got assigned none. And, today probably tells you why, because I think they're ready to start looking at the other sideline and see some other color other than scarlet and gray.
I'm sure it was a very happy interview room as I was talking with Patrick. What was your main takeaway or takeaways from post-game interviews? Because I haven't heard anything yet, so I'm always curious what you and Patrick are your main takeaways from interviews.
Yeah, I think there were several themes. I think, first of all, you have to give the Ohio State defense complete credit and props for this. Penn State coming into the game was like 19th in the country in third down conversions at 48%. They were 1 of 16 today. That is, and the one they got, Dave, was in the final minute on the play right before the touchdown, like a play or two right before the touchdown that they finally scored. So they don't even get it till the 59th minute in a possession that should never have gone that long, or, you know, whatever. But, you know, the 14-point lead, you just kind of like, hey, let the clock continue to roll and let's get out of here. But so it was a command performance, one of the great Ohio State defensive performances that I can recall against a top 10 team in my lifetime. I mean, maybe that year with Coop when they beat him 38-7 here was probably pretty good in 1996. They beat him here 13-6 in the General Mills interception to Chris Gamble game. But, you know, I just look at it, and you have to give this defense total and complete credit. I mean, every time they were asked to make a play, they rose to the occasion. JT Tuimoloau is playing out of his mind right now. Josh Proctor had one of the greatest games of his life, I would venture to say. I mean, he had that third down incompletion. He batted the pass. That was a huge play. And just so many guys rose up on third down and made plays. It wasn't that Penn State, you know, just threw a ball out there to air and nobody was out there and Ohio State got to jump around and celebrate. No, they jumped around to celebrate because somebody made a tackle for a loss or a sack or a pressure or a deflection. I mean, my God, Jermaine Matthews, true freshman, out there balling out. I mean, that's what championship teams are able to do in this situation. When you lose guys like Denzel Burke, you got a guy who's, you know, not as polished, not as experienced, but he's pretty good, and he goes right in there and does it. That's the first thing. The second thing is Marvin Harrison Jr., the dumbasses at ESPN that did this midseason All-American team and had the audacity to put Marvin Harrison Jr. as an honorable mention pick. I don't know who they had on their first team, but those guys can't hold a candle to this guy that we saw today who put on a masterclass of how to beat a top 10 team almost single-handedly on offense. He and McCord, I know McCord, good Lord, 22 of 35, probably 6 or 7 of those are completely on him. I mean, high, wide. He's missing too many guys high and wide. I don't get it. Now, he did have a couple drops, that are going to happen. But if he hones that in, I mean, that one to Tate down the middle, Dave, if he leads Tate on that, that's like an 80-yard touchdown. You know, I mean, that's – he is out the door and gone. And, you know, it's behind him. Just too many guys are having to contort too much to make these catches for him. And having said that, he still had a great day. I mean, I don't know what else to say. They just carved up the number one defense in the sport, you know, with an asterisk that says asterisk. Didn't really play anybody the first 6 weeks. So, you know, in West Virginia is a claim to fame and they're 78th in total offense. I mean, you might check yourself before you wreck yourself. But, you know, man, they got some dudes over there, though. They made some plays. I mean, Ohio State's going to have some bruises after this one, that's for sure.
We'll get you out of here on this, Steve. Larry on YouTube. Steve, do you agree the offensive line played well for the Buckeyes today?
I thought at times they did. I thought at times they got into a rhythm running the football, and then you turn around and the wrong guys are running it. You know, they ran that that option play that they ran the pitch. If that's Dallin Hayden or somebody else, that's 20 yards, and with mine it was 4. And, you know, give mine his credit, 24 carries. You know, he did everything that he could possibly do. Maybe sometimes it wasn't blocked perfectly, but with other guys, it doesn't necessarily need to be blocked entirely perfectly like it does with him, because he just can't turn the corner. He just can't get outside. And they kept trying to put the square peg in the round hole, and then they finally put Trianum back in the game there toward the end. But, you know, by that point, it was a Marvin Harrison, Kate Stover kind of day. Just keep feeding those guys the ball. So offensive line, how do I feel that they played? I think that they put them behind and down a distance a couple times there in the second half with a hold, maybe a false start or something. You know, one of the sacks They didn't block the guy. You know, it was no. It was a complete breakdown. It wasn't the left tackle or the right tackle. It was, you know, nobody recognized what was going on, and they turned a guy loose, and you know, and that's what happened. But so yeah, I would give those guys a B+, solid B+. They gave McCord plenty of time to get things done, and this was against a team that had 27 sacks. That's 3.5 per game coming in. They probably got 2 or 3 today, but it wasn't enough pressure to knock McCord off of his rhythm or anything like that. So I would give him a B+.
Steve, I'll give you an A+. All right, get back to work, my friend. Thank you for hopping on the podcast.
All right, bro. It's on to Wisconsin next week, and I'm going to tell you, you know, Wisconsin, they're playing right now. I don't know what they're doing at Illinois in the Brett Beelzebub game. But here's the thing. They can't rest on their laurels and think they've arrived just because they beat Penn State. They've got the upper hand in the East, yes, but you don't want to piss it away and give it back by going up there next week and, you know, getting swallowed up in the night up there in Madison. So got to get these guys healthy. Igbuka, they miss him. They miss him terribly because they were throwing to other guys who just weren't ready for this moment today. And then Henderson, I don't even know what to say. Somebody said they saw Henderson this week, and he said he was fine. They tried to warm up, wasn't able to play, and that's 3 games now. And, you know, the moving sidewalk is ending. Please look down. You know, it's like at some point, you know, it's an unfortunate situation for him. I hope that he gets it figured out. I hope that they get his injuries treated and gets back in there, but man, it's rough right now. They miss him as well. So
real quick, since you brought it up, Wisconsin just scored a touchdown. They were down 14-0, Wisconsin was, to Illinois. Wisconsin,
well, see, here's it's the same thing. Brett Bielema wants to give it to them in the worst possible way. You think Luke Fickell isn't want to give it to Ohio State? Ohio State
sure does, but
42-0 3 years ago, and he ran off the field in utter embarrassment. He wants to give Ohio State, you know, whatever he can give them next week. Now, he may not have the team to get, especially without Mordecai, but, right, you know, we'll see. Yeah.
So it looks like at halftime, it's going to be Illinois leading at home 14-7 over Wisconsin. Iowa can pretty much wrap up the Big Ten JV today if they beat Minnesota. Iowa up 10-3 at home over Minnesota late in.
You know, here in Columbus, they've
an explosion for Iowa. Iowa has 10 points in the first half, Steve.
That's an explosion. Who are they playing today?
Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Iowa City.
Is it 10-0 or what is it?
10-3.
10-3 Iowa. Well, here in Columbus, there's one division of the Ohio Capital Conference. My buddies and I, we call it the OCC suck, because it's like, you know, nobody ever comes out of it. Somebody wins it, but nobody cares because they're probably like 6-4 or 7-3 or whatever.
Right.
It's like Franklin Heights and, you know, Westland and God knows who, but, you know, we call it the, right, OCC suck. The Big Ten West is the Big Ten suck. So there you go.
Yeah, I thought Big Ten JV was being mean.
JV.
You're getting really mean. You're getting really mean. But I like it. All right, Steve. Good stuff, man. Appreciate it.
All right, kids. We'll see y'all later.
You keep Patrick Murphy out of trouble if that's possible.
Oh, little Murph star. What are we going to do?
All right.
All right. I see
you. All right, man. He is Steve Hellwagon. All right. So you guys think Michigan State's going to knock off Michigan tonight? No, I don't either. I just hope they keep it close, and I hope there's a lot of talk during the telecast about Michigan cheating. That'll be great for recruiting and everything. I have no doubt this is Harbaugh's last year. I don't think I'm breaking news there. I just think there's no way. I'd bet anything he will not be back after this season. However it turns out, we'll see what happens. And, you know, I don't know what NFL team would want him. Maybe the Bears with how things are going there. Maybe the Chargers. We'll see what happens. Uh-oh. Doug Shepard on YouTube is a graduate of Franklin Heights, does not like Steve calling the OCC, that particular division of the OCC, the OCC suck. It is kind of funny with the OCC. You got all these powerhouse like divisions, you know, like Dublin Kaufman and Hilliard Bradley and Upper Arlington and all these in the same, you know, Pickerington North and all of these, not the Pick North is in the same one as those, but these powerhouse divisions. And then there is one that's, you know, pretty light. I won't call it what Steve does, but he's not wrong. But Doug is a graduate of Franklin Heights, is not like that. Sorry, Doug. Sorry, buddy. Mike on Facebook. Dave, what do you think of getting Cody Simon more playing time? I'm loving it. I think Cody Simon's playing really good football. He's eating into Steel Chambers' snaps, and you can see why. And I don't think Steel's playing like terrible, but like I think Cody Simon's just playing good. And that's great to see. You know, they've got like, you know, and that's the big reason CJ Hicks isn't playing is that the number three linebacker is Cody Simon, and they're not going to play more than three linebackers. Usually they only play two, but Cody Simon's playing good, playing really good. Today was about JT, and it was about Marv. Those are the two main players. And Jim Knowles, just hats off to Jim Knowles. But JT and Marv, and there were others that really showed out. You know, Sue mentioned, you know, Jordan Hancock played great. I agree with that. You know, a lot of guys played well. A lot of guys played really well. And, again, to put that type of defensive performance up without your number one corner, and I get that Penn State's, you know, deficient throwing the ball, but again, we can't mention it enough. Last year, Ohio State played against plenty of mediocre offenses that were able to get chunk plays and put up points. We're seeing the best defense in college football, if not the best, one of the top three, in my opinion. All right, I appreciate you guys riding with me tonight. Thank you to all of my guests, the Dean of Ohio State Football Recruiting, Bill Curlick, Jay Book, Jonah Booker, Patrick Murphy, Steve Hellwagon. Thanks to all of those gentlemen. Thanks to all of you. I really appreciate you guys joining me. Hope you guys enjoyed the game. Hope you enjoyed the show. I can't thank you guys enough for hopping on here and joining me on What We Learned Live. Enjoy the rest of the games this evening. Again, thank you to all of my guests. Thanks to all of you. Hope everyone enjoys the rest of your evening and the rest of your weekend.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.